Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Ohayou
gozaimasu.
Saying hello in Japanese, sorry, good morning in Japanese, because Koshin asked me to give a talk about a three-word Japanese phrase, which is mono no oware. Mono no oware, mono means thing, oware means sadness. So the expression mono no oware really means the sadness of things. Why are things sad? Well, because they're transient, they're evanescent, they don't last. What's interesting about Japan is that part of the culture is to see that within the evanescence of things is a particular kind of beauty. Things become more beautiful just because they are not going to last. We know that this concept, this theme, dates back at least 1,000 years to the Heian period of Japanese culture. There's a book, in fact, the very first novel it's thought to be, was written by a Japanese courtier named Lady Murasaki Shikibu. It's about 1,000 pages long, and it is full of oware no mono. Mono no oware. Mono no oware. Oware. And this theme, this sort of cultural theme of the evanescence of things, enhancing their beauty, still permeates Japanese culture. And that's the reason why I put the picture of the cherry blossoms out, because cherry blossoms are, even today, valued in Japan, precisely because they last about a week. And that enhances their beauty, knowing that they're not going to be there the next day when the wind blows, makes people pay more attention to the beauty of the cherry blossoms. The appreciation of the evanescence of beauty and the beauty of evanescence is certainly not limited, though, to Japanese culture. I'm going to read a passage from a book by Rabindranath Tagore. Rabindranath Tagore. He was the first non-European to win the Nobel Prize in literature in about 1916. So I'm going to read from his poem number 66 in the book called The Gardener. And it begins, "None lives forever and nothing lasts for long." And this is, of course, the basic teaching of the Buddha. The Buddha taught that everything is transient. Everything that is born will also die. Everything that we love, our spouses, our children, ourselves, will all eventually perish. Undoubtedly true, from this perspective, kind of depressing. It's interesting, in Japan, Shinto and Buddhism kind of coexist as people practice both. And Shinto gets all the happy events in life. Marriages, births, survival of children to ages 3, 5, and 7. That's all Shinto. Death, Buddhist. In fact, the major occupation of Buddhist priests in Japan is performing funeral ceremonies, and consequently, Buddhist priests are regarded with about the same degree of affection as undertakers are in America. So, returning to Tagore's poem, the first line, "None lives forever, nothing lasts for long," is followed by another line that goes, keep that in mind and rejoice." Rejoice? Why should transience make us rejoice? Well, Tagore goes on to explain, "Our life is not the one old burden. our path is not the one long journey. The flower fades and dies, but he who wears the flower has not to mourn for it. But how can we not mourn for the fading and falling of a once beautiful flower? How can we not mourn the falling of the cherry blossoms? How can we not grieve over the death of a child? The answer to the last question, I think, is implicit in the haiku that's written by Isa, a Japanese poet. It was written on the occasion of the death of one of his children. And it goes, "Dew evaporates, and all our world is dew, so dear, so fresh, so fleeting." What feeling do you all get from that verse? Is Esau mourning the death of his child? I think so. But I think there's something else in there. Let me read it again. "Dew evaporates, and all our world is dew, so dear, so fresh, so fleeting." So those of you who are parents know very well that all our world really is dew. Even though in 2019 our dear little children only rarely die of some childhood disease, they often do turn into rebellious teenagers. They leave home, they go to college, they graduate, they settle in distant towns, they marry, their wives or their husbands take the place of their parents in their lives as the focus of their love. They may visit, you know, once or twice during the year for a day or two. Maybe they'll even bring our grandchildren with them eventually. But these visits are very short-lived. Like the morning dew, all too soon our children evaporate from our lives. And I speak from my own experience, okay? I'm a parent. I have adult children now. And I can remember how sad it was when my son no longer wanted to play basketball with me, but instead wanted to hang out with the kids who I referred to fondly as his hoodlum friends. I can remember, though, not wanting to be with my own parents. That I much preferred at first to be with my male buddies, and then when I got to be an adolescent, my friend girls and finally girlfriends, you know. I also remember, really unfortunately, all too well coming home from Thanksgiving, from my first Thanksgiving from being a freshman in college. And I ate dinner with my father, and no sooner did I finish dinner, I ran out to be with my friends. And I think that must have broken his heart. My mother had died the previous summer, and I had no thought of that. All I thought was, I want to go be with my friends. Father. So the reason I know how badly he must have been hurt is that that's what my kids did to me as soon as they came home from college. They wanted to run out and be with their friends. And I'm guessing that's probably how my children's children will treat them. They'll come home from college, and then my children will know, gee, I must have made my dad really sad when I ran off after coming home as a freshman. Those of you who, like me, have adult children may ask the question, do you really want our adult children to hang around the house and be back home? Isn't there something wonderful about the still fresh memories of these innocent, dear little kids who looked at us with such awe in their eyes and thought we were the wisest people in the world? Now, when they look at us, they don't look at us quite the same way. They have minds of their own, opinions of their own. They may pretend that they're interested in what we think, but let's be frank. They don't care. And some things they really don't want to hear about. For instance, although we raised our children just perfectly, very, very, you know, well, we see them making horrible mistakes raising their children. And if we're wise, we heed the old adage that says that grandparents should keep their wallets open and their mouths shut. Returning to Tagore's poem in the last verse, he writes, "Beauty is sweet to us because she dances to the same fleeting tune as our lives." In other words, the cherry blossoms are especially beautiful to us precisely because their beauty is as evanescent as our own lives. The evanescence of cherry blossoms calls out to us to pay closer attention to them, to appreciate their fleeting beauty more deeply, because we know soon they'll be gone. Similarly, the evanescence of our own lives calls us to pay closer attention to each moment of our lives, to appreciate the fleeting beauty of these moments more deeply, because soon we too will be gone. If we deeply accept the transience of the beautiful cherry blossoms in the spring, the brightly colored leaves in the autumn, the graceful flowers of summer, and the silent snow that falls in winter, then as Zen Master Wuman writes in the verse in Wuman Kong, every day is a good day. If we do not cling to things, if we become one with the transience of everything, if we become one with the transience of everything in our lives and the transience of our lives are themselves, then if we're one with those things, transience is no longer a problem for us. My teacher, my first teacher, Philip Kaplow, used to say, the practice of Zen is the practice of becoming one with all the circumstances of our lives. He practiced this way himself. Throughout the years when he was dying of Parkinson's disease, he never once complained about losing control of his body, about no longer being able to feed himself, about having to wear a diaper and have someone else change his diaper. Kaplow Roshi died peacefully sitting in his wheelchair in the garden of the Rochester Zen Center. Kaplow Roshi's words provide instruction about how to practice Zen in our daily lives, to become one with all the aspects of our daily lives, how to live and how to die. His words also furnish a clue for seeing into koan 29 in the Blue Cliff reference. All of these koans, by the way, are not just abstract problems to solve. Rather, they are something that point to an element of our daily lives, and I think you'll see in a second when I read you the koan, what koan number 29 in the Mumon Kan points to. It begins, a monk asked Dazui, when the fire at the end of the kalpa's a long, long time, sweeps through and the great cosmos is destroyed, will this one be destroyed or not? We're not told what the monk means by this one, but what do you think the monk's really asking? What do you believe that he's hoping that Dazui's answer will be? How do you think he feels when Dazui says, it will be destroyed? Monk may not have been sure that he heard correctly, so he asks again, will it be gone with everything else? Dazui replies, yes, it will be gone with everything else. So let's put the monk's question into a contemporary and more personal context. If global warming puts an end to life on Earth, what will you do? So pretend that you're face to face with Zen Master Dazui, and he puts the question to you. How will you answer him? You answer him with your head. He'll give you 30 blows from his staff. You must answer him from your gut. He asks again, if global warming puts an end to life on Earth, what will you do? How will you answer him? Posing this question ends my talk. Thank you for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.